from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, a massive new study out of Denmark has found a link between oral contraceptive use and depression in women, especially in teenage girls. In the hour ahead, we'll examine the article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and we'll talk about the benefits and potential risks of birth control. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Women who use birth control, especially teenagers, are at a significantly higher risk of being prescribed antidepressants. That's according to a new study from Denmark that tracked more than a million women. The report in the Journal of American Medical Association shows that women who used the birth control pill were 23% likely to be prescribed antidepressants if they took a pill that combined estrogen and progestin. And that rate grew to 34% if women took progestin-only pills. The use of antidepressants was even higher for women who used hormonal patches, vaginal rings, or IUDs. Critics of the study point out that it only proves a correlation between birth control and depression, not a causal link. And in this hour, we discuss the study and we invite listeners to share their experiences with birth control because we want to talk even more broadly about birth control. But let me first introduce to you, the principal supervisor of the study on birth control. His name is Øyvind Liagård, and he's head of professors in obstetrics and gynecology in East Denmark, joins us from the University of Copenhagen. Welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be with you.
Well, we're pleased to have you with us. Let's first talk about the real sense of cause here. I mean, because that's come under serious scrutiny. But before we do that, perhaps you can just tell us the highlights of this study. I mean, particularly in terms of percentages, because we're seeing some different figures here. The percentages I just gave are, I believe, pretty accurate, but you might want to add something to that.
Yeah, besides these overall figures for the increase in use of antidepressants or getting a depression diagnosis at a psychiatric unit, then we also saw very strong age correlations, so that the younger the women were, the higher their increase were with use of hormonal contraception. And that is a new finding. And the other privilege we had here in Denmark, it is that we were able to make a long-term follow-up of more than 1 million women when they entered 15 years and the following 14 years. And what we therefore had the possibility to do, it was what happens with use of antidepressants when women start using hormonal contraception and not how they use antidepressants after having used these contraceptive products for years, many years often. So previous studies, which have been cross-sectional studies, they have typically investigated long-term users of hormonal contraception. And it's not strange that women experiencing mood deterioration or even depression, they stop taking hormonal contraception. So if you only investigate long-term users, you don't get the clue because all those who get depression, or a majority of them at least, stop taking the pill. And therefore, previous studies have underestimated the real impact of hormonal contraception on the influence of depression.
You get into, though, some, it seems to me, difficult lines between moods and what is clinically categorized as depression. And I guess the study, although you dealt with over a million women during a 19-year period, has been criticized largely on the basis of the fact that there are all these hidden factors, you know, pharmacological promotion of antidepressants, of SSRIs, and even more than that with teenagers, I guess, the hormonal surge that goes on during adolescence.
Yeah. First, I have to say that I have never said that a hormonal contraception was the only cause of depression, and not even the most important cause. So there are many factors precipitating depression, both in younger women and in older women and in men, for that case. So the question is, do hormonal contraception constitute a risk factor in itself? Not the most important and far from responsible for all depressions, but do they contribute to an increased risk of getting depression? And if you compare young women on the hormones and then compare them with age-matched women without hormones, then they have all the other factors in common. And if you then see the huge differences we saw, we actually saw an 80% higher incidence of depression in those using hormonal contraception. Then you should begin to consider this issue more closely.
That 80% figure is between the ages of 15 and 19, is that correct?
Yes, between 15 and 19 years.
And yeah. And that's those taking progestin, right?
There are no stating what?
Well, I'm trying to get also into the difference of, between the effects, the results that you had of the different types of oral contraceptives.
I mean, yeah. It's true that the risk was even higher with progestogen-only products. Yeah. The overall risk increased with 80% taking all products together. But it's true that if you looked at progestogen-only, at patches, and vaginal ring, the risk was even higher, yes.
And a lot of this was really observable just after about 6 months' time, from my understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So what I can imagine many women listening to this wondering what to do. This is a risk factor, and I know there are benefits, obviously, especially in terms of avoiding pregnancy. You got 12 million women here in the United States who take the oral contraceptive, most of them to prevent pregnancy. But the risks, how ought they to factor, from your point of view, these risks and evaluate them?
Now, I think there are two steps. The first step is that the scientific world and the professionals recognize that this is an issue with which we have to somehow comply and manage. And the next step, it is when this is settled and people agree that we have an issue here that we have to take care of, then we should inform all the women who we prescribe hormonal contraception to that this is a potential risk. It's only a minority who develop depression, but women should know that if they develop depression after starting hormonal contraceptive use, it could be due to that use. And I don't think that we should say that nobody should take a hormonal contraception due to these findings, but I think it's important to stress that perhaps especially those who have had a recent depression or an actual depression, they should perhaps consider alternatives to hormonal contraception because it may worsen their depression.
Well, Professor Leagard, I thank you for joining us. Most appreciative of your time. And continued success to you and your research. Thank you.
Thank you very much for participating.
That's Øyvind Leagard. He's head of professors of obstetrics and gynecology in East Denmark, University of Copenhagen, the principal supervisor of this study on birth control that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Jennifer Conti is clinical assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Stanford. She joins us by phone from San Jose. Welcome, Professor Conti.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you. You've expressed some concern about maybe the media taking this, as it often does with many of these kinds of studies, and kind of running too hard with it or too fast.
All right. No, I think, just as the lead author just pointed out, it's paramount in these studies to point out that this is a correlation study only. And so in plain English, that means that data like this really raises questions, it doesn't answer them. That being said, you know, it's really tempting when you hear this sort of thing to just, you know, take it and run and make a story out of the media that just sounds a lot more appealing and actually scary than it actually is.
Well, what would your advice be to, for example, young women, teenage women with depression in terms of trying to find out how important this really may contribute?
Yeah, well, I think just in general, my approach to talking about birth control with women is a very individualized one. So, you know, it's really important to recognize that every woman is different. Every woman's experience is valid. And so if a woman comes to me saying that she's worried that her birth control is causing her depression or contributing to it, you know, that's something I'm going to listen to and take seriously, not because of this study, but just because her experience is valid. And so we may try a method with less hormone or maybe a non-hormonal method.
There aren't that many, let's be blunt about this, great alternatives when it comes to...
Right.
You got the copper IUD, I suppose, as an option, and condoms people don't favor generally. I mean, it must be difficult for you to advise when you come up against really that major obstacle. The pill revolutionized.
Definitely, definitely. You know, I think, I say this often, the alternative to not using birth control isn't just, use condoms or use the copper IUD. For some women, it is, and that's great, but a lot of women don't tolerate those methods. And so the alternative in that situation is actually pregnancy, a time in your life when the hormones are much higher than what they would be, were you on birth control. And so what's the risk of depression in pregnancy or postpartum for women who are predisposed? And that really is the comparison group that we need to be looking at.
Jennifer Conte with us again as clinical assistant professor of OBGYN at Stanford. I'd like to talk with you, Professor Conte, about the so-called third generation of pills for a moment, as long as we're on birth control here, because there was a 2015 study of these new birth control pills. They're more likely, I believe, to cause blood clots, aren't they?
There was concern about that third generation of birth control pills in particular. I think you're talking about like Yaz. And again, what happened was, you get sort of this media pickup of this one particular birth control pill causing more clots, when really there was the absolute risk. So the actual number of women affected is not that much higher than women using other pills. And that concept is really hard for people to understand, sort of this relative risk versus absolute risk. You know, basically what it means is, yes, it's saying that there's a slightly higher, percent of women affected when you do studies. But what does that mean for the real woman? How many more women in real life are going to be affected by this? And those numbers really aren't that high.
You know, perhaps I've been remiss here in just not asking you, what is the third generation pill? Chemically, or what makes it different?
Yeah, so when you talk about the generations of the pills, you're talking about the level of progesterone in, or that particular hormone in the pill. So most birth control pills have two hormones, the estrogen and the progesterone, and it's the progesterone that we're talking about there.
Also, Cynthia Gorney, who in fact, going back a number of years, used to do this program from time to time as a fill-in and sometimes on Fridays, recently published an article that was... looking at, the conventional birth control pill and Alzheimer's in women. Again, maybe the media's been playing this up too much. I don't know. Perhaps we could get some light on this from you. There's this whole idea of the timing hypothesis, when and how long women have been using estrogen and how it might affect even their mental faculties.
Yeah. Well, I think that question goes back to this, the women's health study that it has nothing to do with this. That's more like, postmenopausal symptoms and things like that. But in general, these types of studies, like I was saying earlier, they really have a lot of unanswered questions. Just because you see a correlation between whether it's depression and birth control or mental, Alzheimer's or any other symptom you're talking about, that doesn't necessarily mean that the birth control in particular caused it. Or that one should stop taking their prescribed medications, whether it's their birth control, antidepressants, whatever else their doctors prescribe them.
And Holly Griggs-Spall is an author of a book called Sweetening the Pill, or How We Got Hooked on Hormonal Birth Control. Her work on women's health issues has been featured in Marie Claire, The Guardian, and the BBC, and we have her on the line with us from Los Angeles this morning. Welcome, Holly Griggs-Spall.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. First of all, this research that's out of Denmark pretty much is in line with the work that you've done in interviewing many women.
Yes, I've been working in this area for the last 8 years. My focus has mainly been on the psychological side effects of hormonal birth control. I've interviewed hundreds of women over those years for my book, for the upcoming documentary, and I've been contacted independently by many more women with their stories. This topic is currently trending on Twitter, with many, many women sharing their stories of exactly what I discussed in my piece in The Guardian, which is experiencing depression on hormonal birth control, and also experiencing depression on hormonal birth control and then being dismissed by their doctors as not having a link.
Yeah, you come across very strong in that Guardian article about what you call gaslighting and paternalistic attitudes that men have. And with this study, particularly with a lot of the pushback suggesting that perhaps oral contraceptives are not the cause, that it has more to do with, especially with teenagers being more emotional and going through that stage that teenagers go through?
Well, I think we can definitely accept that teenagers are more susceptible to depression. However, blaming something like heartbreak or relationships or sex is not only kind of coming from a strangely conservative point of view, but I think if it were older women that the research showed to have the higher risk, we'd say it was something like divorce or careers. I think it's very troubling that we're looking around for other possibilities. Of course, there are other factors involved in depression and causes of depression. And as the researcher has said in the interview today, that they did account for those for the most part. And that's one of the benefits of this study, that they were able to account for certain factors. And it was for over a million women over a long period of time, a very high-quality study.
It's a high-quality study. Forgive me, but you think the numbers are probably too low, don't you?
Well, actually, that's actually what they say in the research because, the thing is that really with the research that we already have, GPs shouldn't be prescribing certain hormonal birth control to women who have a predisposition for depression. So the researchers assume that they're not doing that. And so that coupled with the fact that many women come off the pill pretty quickly because they realize that they have depression symptoms or mood changes. And also the fact that, of course, not all people who experience depression are diagnosed or take antidepressants, as the research shows. Not all women have clinical depression, but may have subclinical depression. So that suggests that it could be an underestimated number of women who are experiencing negative mental health side effects from hormonal birth control.
Again, Holly Griggs-Spall is author of Sweetening the Pill. Let me go back to Jennifer Conte, who again is clinical assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Stanford. Jennifer Conte, did the study really prove a correlation? I just put it to you bluntly, between birth control and depression, despite all this exhaustive research and data?
No. Again, I know it's very tempting to want to prove that, and I agree with Holly as well. It is a great study. The Danish are very, very famous for, you know, producing great literature, but it's not the right type of study. We need to be very careful about how we talk about these findings. It's tempting to say that birth control causes depression. Definitely from this study, we can now say, hey, it looks like there's an association. But what else is potentially in the mix? What else is confounding that? And that isn't us trying to find other excuses. That's not us saying absolutely it has nothing to do with birth control, but it's just too premature and too sweeping to say that about birth control as a whole. This is not the right type of study.
But let me go back to Holly Griggs-Spall. You've said that you believe that that was the reason for depression in your life.
Yes, it has. I just wanted to respond to that. I think it comes down to individual women such as myself who have experienced depression on hormonal birth control. As I say, some women discontinue early on because they decide that the change is obviously due to them starting a new birth control method. But some women take years to figure out this link, like I did. I was on the pill for 10 years. I tried a lot of different brands. And Yasmin was the one that had particularly severe side effects for me. It took me a long time to make that link. But when I did and I came off and I realized how much better I felt, not just off Yasmin, but off the pill in general, I realized, you know, that link was very important for me.
Well, Yasmin was a very, Yasmin was a very special case, as I recall, wasn't it? I mean, there was a lot of data about that pill specifically affecting women's emotions and their mental stability and so causing depression and so forth. It wasn't kind of in a class by itself, Dr. Conti?
Yeah, so this is sort of what we were talking about earlier, but again, even more important, I totally agree here. Every woman's experience is completely valid, you know, and so regardless of whatever this study says, if a woman like Holly comes into the hospital or to the clinic and says, this is what I found, then absolutely there's some validity to her statement there, and we would try taking her off pills and see, you know, if that solves the problem.
Well, let me do this. People are very interested in this topic, as I imagine they would be, and want more information and certainly want to get their own opinions in. And I noticed that the calls are lighting up already. So let me begin the process of getting those of you listening involved by telling you that you can join us at our toll-free number, and I invite you to do that. That number is 866-733-6786. If you'd like to weigh in here with questions or comments, please feel free to do so by phone. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and I'm going to go to your calls. Let me begin with a caller, Rebecca. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Michael. I was 20 years old, prescribed an oral contraceptive without any warning that depression could be a possible side effect. Within a month, I was having a hard time getting out of bed, crying for hours, just completely in the throes of depression. I figured it out, stopped the pill after about 2 months, but it took another 2 months for all of the effects to wear off. I had waves of depression hitting me where my vision would literally turn blue. Once the depression abated and I had stopped using the contraception, haven't used it for 25 years, have not had one instance of depression since.
Jennifer's story, Conti, pretty dramatic story. How does it conform to your practice and your research?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that sounds pretty alarming. I think that if I, you know, had symptoms like that, absolutely, I would start looking to see, like, well, what have I done recently in my life that's changing it and try to change those things. Thankfully, as the lead author pointed out, only a minority of women develop these symptoms, or in their study anyway, develop depression. So, you know, in any study and with any medication, you will always find small numbers of women who have symptoms that are different from everyone else. But, but that doesn't mean that you make sweeping changes about the whole medication as a whole. You just look at that situation with compassion and try to find the best care for that person.
Well, let me thank Rebecca for her call and read some comments that are coming in from other women with their experiences. Actually, I'll do that after the break as the music's coming up, and we'll hear from more of you when we return. Please feel free to join the program. Again, we're talking right now with Jennifer Conti, Clinical Assistant Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Stanford, and Holly Griggs-Paul, who's an author of a book called Sweetening the Pill, or How We Got Hooked on Hormonal Birth Control. And her work on women's health issues has been featured in The Guardian and on the BBC, as well as in Marie Claire. You can join us toll-free 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org or go to our website kqed.org/forum or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Talking about a new study linking depression with birth control, especially for teenage girls. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Women using birth control, especially teenagers, are at significantly higher risk of depression. That's according to a new study from Denmark that tracked more than 1 million women. And the report is in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And it shows that women who use the birth control pill were 23% more likely to be prescribed antidepressants if they took a pill that combined estrogen and progestin. And that rate grew to 34% if women took progestin only. We're talking about that study and its implications. And we're with Jennifer Conti, who is Clinical Assistant Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Stanford, and Holly Griggs-Paul, author of Sweetening the Pill. We spoke earlier with the principal supervisor of the study on birth control, who joined us from the University of Copenhagen, Øyvind Leegaard. And you can join us as well. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle's at KQED Forum, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. I just want to get on the record with you, Jennifer Conti, the fact that we've been talking a lot about, of course, taking the pill largely to prevent pregnancy, but there are many women who take the pill for acne, for mood swings prevention, for menstrual cycle regulation, endometriosis. I mean, there are a whole really litany of things in terms of pill use.
There's so many reasons that someone would be on a birth control pill, just, you know, other than just preventing birth. And in that regard, you know, it really is a risks and benefits sort of thing. You have to really weigh, you know, the risks of not taking any medication for whatever that issue is.
Can you talk, though, I want to go to our listener comments and calls here, but I'd like to maybe hear what you have to say just about the biology of this. What does the pill do in terms of regulating the body's hormones, and perhaps in a lay fashion, describe that process to us.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer, and I don't think that it's completely well understood, particularly because there are studies looking at this exact issue. You know, does birth control cause depression? Finding the exact opposite. There's a study in 2013 by Carolyn Westhoff, mentions the same thing, and it's hard to look at these kinds of studies and draw, again, sweeping conclusions when you're getting different answers. But in terms of the physiology, birth control has been used, to help regulate women's hormones. It's been used for, different kinds of GYN causes, not just for birth control, as we were mentioning.
Let me go back to Holly Griggs-Paul. And Holly Griggs-Paul, I'd like to just read you a couple of listeners' responses here. There's slight narratives about individual experiences, and see if this conforms with the research you've done and the many women that you interviewed. Heather writes, I struggle with depression long before using hormone-based contraception, but it got much harder to manage when I was on the pill. Progesterone-only pills made me paranoid and suicidal almost immediately, and it took months to get back to, quote, normal. And here's Corinne, who writes, I started taking hormone birth control my senior year at college, and shortly after found myself in a deep depression. Assuming a causal relationship, I quit using the birth control, but remained depressed for a long time. Still don't know if it was the stress of senior year, the birth control, or the combination of both, but I stay far away from hormones and now use a copper IUD. Highly recommend it. There are kind of varying sensibilities in those two responses. One suggesting that birth control was definitely responsible for the depression, and the other saying, I'm not sure, but I'll stay away from it. Is that pretty much what a lot of what you were discovering?
Yes, and I think it's important to note that, you know, this point is that even when we look at absolute risk and say, well, this might be a minority of women that experience this, we don't know who is going to experience it before they go on the hormonal birth control. And also, when they do experience it, if you are one of those people, you are one of those people. That's incredibly serious. That can lead to suicidal ideation. We know that clinical diagnosed depression is serious, right, and accept that. And if you think about how many women, as you said, I think 12 million in the U.S. alone, many more globally, that's thousands, if not millions, of women worldwide who are subject to this potential side effect, right? So I think those kind of stories only show that when it does happen to you, it's really serious, which is why I do think in terms of sweeping changes that we need to take the researchers' advice and make sure that we're warning women ahead of time that this is a possibility, and that we're making sure that women are aware that this is something that they might be dealing with.
There's a risk.
So that they can make, yeah. So they can make the decision for themselves. Most women are. Women are smart. We know when the depression is coming from a relationship issue or stress in our lives, or whether it's something from birth control. It actually feels very different. I can tell you from personal experience, stress from your general life event feels very different to the kind of depression I had when I was on hormonal birth control.
Well, I wonder, though, and here's another, these things are so individual in many respects, but here's another listener who writes, and let me go to you on this, Jennifer Conti. I found my mood stabilized when I was on the pill. Do hormonal contraceptives ever help with depression?
Yeah, that sort of gets back at what you were saying earlier. When some people, when they do, experience like premenstrual dysmorphic disorder or really bad PMS, sometimes birth control pills will be used to help regulate that. And that's not to say, you know, that birth control should be used to regulate women's hormones or that women's hormones need to be regulated in any way. It's just that given the different situation, it actually can be helpful for some women.
And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me bring Gail on. Gail, thanks for waiting. You're on.
I think this is something that should be strongly researched. I've been on hormone replacement due to a lack of certain hormones, and it's separated between the estrogen and progesterone. And I've recently noticed that whenever I take the progesterone, I have serious depression and suicidal thoughts from it. I won't take it anymore. It needs to be looked at, seriously researched.
Okay, well, that's certainly what they were doing in Denmark, or bringing a lot of this to bear. And I want to go to more of your calls in a moment. Just a listener called in earlier to say she was born in 1950 and wants people to remember what life was like before the pill, when there were no options except pregnancy or what she described as the purity ring, and wants people to acknowledge the privilege of living in the age of the pill. Let me go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Sam. Sam, you're on.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, hi. I'm a pediatrician practicing in the Bay Area. And I prescribe oral contraceptive pills a lot to my teenage female patients. And I just really want to echo the doctor from Stanford, the professor, her point in that there's two different kinds of studies of medicine. There's one that says maybe this is happening. This presents a theory. And there's another kind of study that tells you whether the theory is true or not true. This study is the first kind that says maybe this is happening. But in order for this to really be applied in the clinical scenario, you really have to have a follow-up study that says whether this is actually true or not. And yet, I do agree that every case, every individual case has to be taken on its merits. And if somebody comes into my clinic and says, I started experiencing depression and it has a timeline correlation with when she started her OCPs, then you definitely take that seriously.
Okay. Well said, and I thank you for the call, Sam. Going to some more listener comments, a tweet from Rebecca. Can your guests talk about possible link between depression and alternate forms of birth control, like the vaginal ring? Is it the same correlation? Let's go back to that with you, Professor Conti, could we? Possibly maybe the risk of non-pill hormonal birth control?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm glad they brought that up, because this study talks about these other different methods, too. Where, you know, we're focusing on pills, but they talk about the ring, the patch. They talk about the leave-in adjuster IUD, or the commonly Mirena IUD. And actually, they were finding higher correlation with depression in these other methods. But a couple of really interesting things to point out. One, if you thought that there was like a dose response, meaning the more hormone you had, the higher risk of depression, it doesn't make sense that you would have a higher risk of depression with things like the IUD, because that's actually the method that has the lowest amount of circulating hormone in your blood. So that doesn't make sense. And the other thing to point out, too, is that they automatically excluded women using Depo, the shot that a lot of women use for birth control. That's some of the highest dose hormone that we have. And you know, I think in their paper they say they excluded it because they thought maybe women using Depo were more likely to have depression. But that's sort of a little bit of a bias right there, too. So there's the study has a lot of questions that are unanswered.
Well, and another listener wants to know whether the study said anything about non-hormonal IUDs or any of the non-hormonal forms of birth control.
No, and they didn't.
Wasn't in their purview, really, no.
Yeah, they excluded that.
But a big question also, and let me go to you on this, Holly Griggs-Paul, seems to be the role of big pharma, the pharmaceutical industry, because they certainly have an interest in selling antidepressant pills and SSRI. And, you know, I'm not necessarily hunting for conspiracy here, but one has to question just what kind of role they might play in this.
Well, I think that's obviously very interesting, you know, with the research you mentioned earlier with the third generation. You know, it was revealed actually by the former FDA commissioner that illegal practices had been undertaken by the pharmaceutical company to promote their new brands to women, including undercover news stories, undisclosed ads in magazines, disguised as articles. And these were pushed, and it's, you know, the reason they were pushed, they were pushed to doctors as well as to women directly. They were often told that these third generation methods would be better because they'd have less side effects. So yes, that's absolutely something to be concerned about. I did want to just quickly circle back to what was said about teenagers by the caller, because I find it interesting that that there's no mention of the fact that the American Committee of Obstetricians and Gynecologists actually recently recommended that doctors consider the menstrual cycle as the fifth vital sign, which means that when you're a teenager, your doctor should be observing your menstrual cycle for signs of hormonal imbalance, thyroid issues, and even eating disorders. Because that can affect your menstrual cycle. You can't do that if teenagers are on hormonal birth control because they're not experiencing a menstrual cycle. The hormones are synthetic. They actually replace your menstrual cycle. They're regulators, a very loaded word. They actually are replacing the hormones that your body produces. So I think actually the doctors would do well to look at that ACOG recommendation because, you know, they did actually recently say that it's important to see the menstrual cycle as the fifth vital sign.
And again, Holly Griggs-Ball is the author of Sweetening the Pill, or How We Got Hooked on Hormonal Birth Control. And our next caller joining us is Catherine. Catherine, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. So I just wanted to sort of bring up my personal experience and also sort of challenge what seems to be really standard practice of you go into the doctor's office. I'm 47 at this point, but I've done this over the years going back to my 20s, talking about very bad PMS in terms of emotional PMS. I mean, I certainly have other symptoms too, but and then the standard thing that they say is, okay, well, you should actually go on the birth control pill to have less PMS. And then I go, okay, I'll try it again. I try the pill, and it seems like my PMS just gets turbo in terms of anger and or depression. It just worsens, and I've seen this pattern over and over. So I'm just really kind of blown away that this is still standard procedure to just offer the pill when a woman says she has bad, you know, PMS and depression.
Jennifer Conti.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, you know, I hear what you're saying, and so that is the recommendation when someone has really bad PMS. One of the treatment options we have is birth control. Another one is SSRIs or antidepressants, not because you're depressed, but just because there's many uses for those medications. But then again, you know, going back to this study is just a correlation. It's just showing that maybe there's some sort of association here. It's not saying that it's causing it and therefore we should stop using it for PMS. And then there's also the idea that every woman's physiology is different and it may act different in different people's bodies.
I don't know if this – I'm looking at a question here, and let me go to you on this again, Professor Conti. It may be outside of your realm of research, but a listener wants to know, first says it makes sense that the brain and uterus are linked. Are there any studies of women with bipolar disorder in the pill?
So with this study, they actually excluded bipolar disorder or any other mental health disorder. They were just looking at depression, so I can't speak to that.
But are there any studies extant that you know of?
Not that I know of, no. Yeah, but I'd have to look.
And, of course, Melissa raises the perennial question, why aren't there birth control options for men? I've been on birth control once, was uncontrollably emotional, and I'm nervous to return. Feels to me like a man's world. Let me get Abby on next. Abby, you're on.
Yes. One thing I haven't heard anyone talk about yet is, and something that I found very beneficial in my adult life, is natural family planning, which is not the rhythm method, but helps you to chart your cycles using your body temperature and different physical symptoms. It's really educating women about how their bodies work. It's completely reversible. You can use it to prevent pregnancy, to help get pregnant, and then also it can help you if you have a doctor who can work with you to figure out what problems you're having in your cycle. And it's just been great. I haven't heard anyone mention it, and I'd really like to put it out there for any women. You can look online about natural family planning. It's just been a really gentle and hormone-free, wonderful, embracing a women's health kind of option out there.
Well, you are certainly enthusiastic about it. Do either of our guests want to comment on it?
Sure.
Yes, actually, this is what I use myself, so I'd love to talk about it.
Holly Griggs-Ball.
I actually practice this with manually, as it's called, which is cycle charting. I call it the fertility awareness method, but yes, it's natural family planning with condoms. And during my fertile phase, as I mentioned in my Guardian piece, women are only fertile for a small number of days per menstrual cycle. But now I actually use a DAISY, which is a fertility computer, and it does the analysis and interpretation of my fertile sign, my basal body temperature for me. It's a medically certified device. So I absolutely agree. I think every woman should be educated about their fertility and should know how to read the signs of their fertility. I've done it for the last 8 years, and now I actually just use the DAISY, which just makes it really simple and easy for me.
Well, let me thank the caller for that, and thank you for your own experience expressing, Holly Griggs-Ball. I also wanted to bring in to the mix here a couple of things that I came over, encountered in my research. One in four women apparently is taking a psychiatric medication. I get back to that concern about Big Pharma and its role in all this. That statistic for men is 1 in 7. And also, since most of our listeners are in California, you should probably be apprised of the fact that starting the 1st of January, California women can pick up a year's worth of pills. It's typically now only 3 months at a time. Either of our guests want to comment on that? Because it will certainly make a difference.
Yeah, I'll comment on the rise in antidepressants, I would say. I think, and it's important to point out with this study, but then also just in general, I would say over the last decade or so, we've had really a decrease in the stigma associated with depression and mental health in general. More people are coming forward, talking about, symptoms and experiences that are happening or that they're having, and that's great. And more people are getting treated for that. So that's another thing to throw in the mix here. Yet, is it depression that's increasing, or is it the depression was around the whole time, and we're just finally making it more acceptable for people to come out and seek care? And then the other thing, just circling back really quickly to the family planning, the natural family planning, great method. The only issue with that is that if you are someone who does not have regular menstrual cycles, which a growing number of people do, especially as the number of obesity or the percentage of people with obesity is rising, that method doesn't work as well. So it's great if you have normal cycles, not so much if you don't.
And we bring in more of your calls. Let me go next to Jonathan. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm a family physician in the Bay Area, and I wanted to make 2 points and concerns about the study. One is the reference group being just non-users of contraception and not making the distinction of really the appropriate control would be people who are seeking contraception but end up using non-hormonal methods, because especially this finding for teenagers, if you think about what is this a marker of? Who are these women who are these teenagers coming to get contraception? Well, they're women who are probably starting to initiate sexual activity, and they're inherently different than the group that isn't seeking healthcare and seeking contraception. And so even though the authors do their best job to adjust for things, they're not able to adjust for that difference. And then the other thing is I just want to point out the absolute risk is what's important. What happens if we're talking about a 0.5% increase in depression here for these women. But if all these women who were to react to the study and go off contraception, you'd have probably in a year about half of them, if they're sexually active, would become pregnant. And we know that postpartum depression affects about 10 to 20% of women. So, if all of those women dropped their pills, half of them had unintended pregnancies, as about half of pregnancies are unintended in the U.S., you'd have a much higher impact in terms of prevalence of depression with postpartum depression. So I think just reminding people, what is the scale, the absolute scale? Yes, it's a 20, 22% relative risk increase, but that's only, one woman out of 200 who are who start birth control who may be getting an extra case of depression, even if that was associated.
All right, Jonathan, I thank you for that call. Good to hear from you. I want to go back, if I may, to Jennifer Conte, who, again, is clinical assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Stanford. Different effects with the pill, obviously, for different women. But there's also been a good deal of study, hasn't there, about side effects? I mean, weight gain and mood changes and missed periods and decrease in libido, vaginal discharge.
Yeah, you know, I think we as providers have wondered for a long time about the relationship between birth control and mood, weight gain, all of these other symptoms, especially as we see our patients coming in and anecdotally saying, hey, look, I'm feeling these things. And that's why there are so many studies in recent years looking into this, especially the weight gain issue. That's also another, you know, charged issue that we really haven't been able to work out completely yet, that we continue to look at. And I think what that and what all of this says is that we need more studies, and we need the right kinds of studies, like the caller right before said, you know, well said.
But there were things, for example, that I, in my research for the show that I came across, it never would have occurred to me about, for example, fluid retention actually causing the cornea to swell or change shape, and contact lenses as a result don't fit the eye.
Yeah. Well, so the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that when researchers are initially studying a medication, any medication, the way that it's designed is that they ask women who are trying these medications to report any kind of symptom they're having. So maybe it's depression, maybe it's, you know, corneal swelling, maybe it's whatever it is. And you have to take it seriously. So if a woman says, hey, I'm feeling this, even though it's really obscure and you don't think related to the medication, you have to write it down and report it. So you will get with any medication these random symptoms that you don't know for sure from the medication or what, but it's your responsibility to report it.
All right, and I want to bring on another caller. Sarah, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out a lot of this conversation has put the onus on the women to come to their doctors with the symptoms, and that puts a lot of responsibility on women to understand that their depression is something to be talked about. But what I know about depression is there's a huge amount of shame. So even if this is a correlation study, I think it's really important for physicians to take away that there is this possibility and be proactive in the conversation instead of waiting, just like what was just said, for the patient to come to the doctor and describe their symptoms, because they don't always do that.
Good point, Sarah, and I thank you for that. In fact, I think I have another good point from Erica who wants to chime in here. Erica, welcome.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to reiterate what Dr. Conti was saying and what part of this conversation has been about at a broader level, though. Is just thinking about the types of studies and being clear with the public and public education around whether this is a population-level study that is looking at a cross-section, a snapshot in time, if it's looking at prospective but not necessarily being able to say cause and effect versus a randomized controlled trial that more closely approximates cause and effect. And I think, you know, there's value in all of them, obviously. There's value in even storytelling and a lot of qualitative studies, but we just need to be very clear when we're releasing these studies about what they are so that people know how to contextualize them from the outset.
And again,
that's all I wanted to say.
I'm glad you said it. Thank you for that. I was struck by, we had earlier on Øyvind Liegaard, who's head of the professors in Denmark, that did this whole study, and something that he said in print about this, I mean, they asked him outright about, you know, cause and effect, and he said, quite possibly, yes. I mean, it was an interesting way of phrasing things. Let me bring more of your calls on, though, I mean, in terms of the correlation. Anne is joining us next. Anne, you're on.
Hi, I've been listening to the program, and I just wanted to give a positive spin on birth control pills. I had a hormone imbalance, and I was on them from age 19 until age 45. And basically, it controlled the hormone problems I had. I had no depression. I was sexually active, many partners. I never got pregnant, and it was great. And I just wanted to give that information to the young women out there because, you know, I'm sure there are some people who will experience these side effects, but I have friends who even were on pills and then they had to take another pill and then they had no side effects. So, you know, I have also friends who got pregnant using other methods. And I just think it's really important if you work with your doctor, you know, and you don't have these side effects, the birth control pills are really a great revolutionary medication for us. So
I wonder, hang on the line for a minute, Anne. I want to hear what Holly Griggsbaugh has to say in response to your comment.
Yes, I think that's true. And I think, you know, the pill can be very good for some women. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is women with endometriosis often find they must manage their symptoms with hormonal birth control, including the Mirena IUD. And that's a matter of being able to continue with their lives. successfully because of the pain that they experience.
And excuse me, it also decreases the risk of breast cysts, of ovarian problems, pelvic inflammatory disease. There are a lot of things that it does do in prevention.
Sure. When you're talking about cancer, that's a difficult one. There are some reproductive cancers it seems to lower the risk of, but there are others that it seems to increase the risk of. So that's a complicated conversation. But I think, you know, what is important to come back to is that, you know, it's up to the individual woman, but I think all women should be aware of this possibility. And I find it very difficult to hear a lot of the scaremongering that we have that's trying to keep women on birth control methods that they might not be comfortable with being on by telling them that they will or are 50% likely to have an unplanned pregnancy if they come off. I've been off the pill for 8 years myself, successfully been able to avoid any pregnancy scares during that time. And, you know, men have to remember as well, there are condoms. If your partner wants to come off the pill, you should support her. Use condoms, use a separate spermicide. It's a very effective method. Then she can go ahead and learn more about her fertility cycle. If she chooses a copper IUD, she might choose a copper IUD. And, you know, but I think it's important to support women who do choose to come off. And that's partly the job of the male partner as well in realizing that this can be a problem and that they don't have to take medication every day or have an IUD. So you really need to respect women's experiences in that way.
Yeah, I asked Anne to stay on because, Anne, I thought you sounded very supportive of the idea of widespread use of the pill.
Well, I am. I understand, you know, there may be complications, but I mean, I'm almost 60 years old. I take no medications. I'm very much a don't give me a pill unless I absolutely need it. But in this case, I needed it, and it had the bonus of helping me stay, you know, not pregnant. So I never had to worry about that. And I think the problem is that, yeah, it'd be great if men stepped up forward and took responsibility, but it doesn't happen for women a lot.
All right. I'm going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. Anne, thank you, and thanks to our guests. We're coming up to the end of this program, and I want to remind you that you can continue this discussion online. A lot of interest, so go to kqed.org/forum. Many comments I couldn't get to, and many callers. Apologies, just so much time we have. This is a topic that obviously hit a nerve. Thanks to Holly Griggs-Ball, to Professor Jennifer Conti, and to Oyvind Leagord, who was the principal supervisor of the study on birth control. We're here with you Monday through Friday, and Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer, and our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our executive producer, Joanne Wallace. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.